When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Don't miss out on your chance to listen to four-time Super Bowl champ Charlie Weiss on the only podcast solely devoted to everyone's favorite position in football, the quarterback. Listen for free now by subscribing wherever you get podcasts or by going to CelebrityQB.com.
Welcome to the Fantasy Throwdown Podcast. I'm your host, Dwayne Callender. Quite a bit went on in the world of sports last night, so let's get right down to it. The Cleveland Cavaliers completed the emasculation of the Toronto Raptors last night, and a victory that surprised absolutely no one. I called this one from the start. Here's the thing. And, you know, people want to argue analytics all the time, but the simple fact of the matter is that Toronto was cruising that regular season, and the biggest issue that they had was a mentality standpoint, because all they know how to do is just play regular season basketball. In the playoffs, there's a way you have to adapt your game to be a grittier team. You have to get dirty buckets. You have to be willing to sacrifice your body in order to get those results on the defensive end and the offensive end. And Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan are not built for the playoffs. They don't like getting physical with players. It's clear cut as that, because Dwayne Casey had to go to his bench and bench DeMar DeRozan in game three, just to get back in the game, because those guys, CJ Miles, they don't care. They're just happy to get the playing time. But that's how embarrassing it was. Like, Dwayne Casey had to save DeMar DeRozan further embarrassment for himself. And he did him no favors last night. Again, not showing up in the first half and then getting himself tossed from the game on a weak flagrant 2 call. It was a weak one because he just slapped at his head. But it was a soft play, because if you're going to stop the guy, wrap him up. He does a weak swipe at Jordan Clarkson and winds up clocking him in the head. If you're going to hit the guy, hit the guy. If you're going to actually play the game, wrap him up. The less said about the Raptors, the better. I mean, to be perfectly frank, the money line that Vegas gave him the Cavaliers to start the series at 185 was some of the easiest money you could ever make. I don't understand how people got so caught up in the analytics that the Cavaliers were going to have a tremendous struggle against the Raptors. I think they got misled by the fact that the Pacers pushed them to 7. The Pacers pushed the Cavs to 7 because they were willing to get dirty and into the grind. The Cavs do not want to grind with teams. If you muck it up and you force them to work hard, the Cavs will wilt at certain points, even with as great as LeBron James is. People seem to miss that fact. Toronto is a finesse team through and through, even more of a finesse team than Cleveland, because even last night, Kevin Love realized that he could boss these guys around and got into the low block and beat them up. I mean, that's how embarrassing this series got. Toronto had basically no willpower, and I like Dwayne Casey, but sometimes being a nice guy doesn't do you any favors, because, you know, at a certain point, you might as well have just benched your starting five outside of Valanciunas. Valanciunas is the only guy who acquitted himself in that series. Even though he missed a bunch of bunnies in game one, he was the only guy who showed up in every game that series to make positive contributions, even though he just missed a ton of shots game one. But outside of that, I mean, this was just absolutely embarrassing. The less said about Serge Ibaka, the better. Kyle Lowry, last podcast I already said there was an APB out for him because he was a no-show. He showed up in game three only because the Cavs let him, because they focused the double team on DeMar DeRozan, so Lowry literally had free reign to actually do something on offense, and yet still, the best he could do was get 26 points. That's just not going to cut it if the other guy's being shut down. Between Lowry and DeRozan, they got equaled by LeBron himself. That's just not going to get it done. And the simple fact of the matter is, the Toronto Raptors have to blow their team up, because unless you want to accept being mediocre and just, be a top four seed for the next 2 to 3 years, fine, and just, sell tickets, that's your prerogative. But if you actually have an incentive to win, you have to blow this team up, because guess what? Boston's not going anywhere, and the Sixers aren't going anywhere. And those two teams are going to be the top two seeds from here on out. Basically, you're going to be fighting for scraps with the likes of Milwaukee and, if the Wizards ever get their act together, teams like that. But that's literally what the ceiling is for Toronto. They're not going anywhere anytime soon. So you might as well blow it up and figure out where you're going to ship DeRozan. Please do not ship any of these players to the Knicks. I will just say that as a proviso. We suffer enough as is with guys who can't perform when needed. But outside of that, I think people are now overhyping the Cavs. They're saying, they're playing their best basketball of the year. No, they're really not. It was just more about the lack of competition that they were dealing with that it gave them their confidence back. I still say that if they get into a series with Boston or Philly, most likely Boston, they probably end up taking one of the first two games. But that middle game set where people think that they're going to roll, I actually see them struggling, because I actually think some of the defensive tweaks will actually start getting to them. So they're not out of the woods yet in terms of the Eastern Conference. It's just that Toronto was even more of a pushover than I originally stated they were. I knew that they would get rolled on. I didn't see a sweep coming. But it just goes to show you, again, that, people may not like the idea, but reseeding is absolutely necessary in the NBA, because there are too many pretenders in the playoffs, and it's especially rampant in the Eastern Conference. There are way too many soft teams in the East that it needs to get shaken up, because this is not watchable basketball. The Cavs were literally toying with the Raptors right up until the last 5 minutes of the second quarter, and then blew the doors off the game. And it wasn't even a matchup at in the second half, because the Raptors at no point ever made a commitment to getting back in that game. They just accepted that they were going to get swept, and that was the end of it. There was no fight. There was no nothing. And, at the end of the day, just make it a first-round matchup against a Western Conference team and have them get bounced that way. That's what you really needed to do at this stage, or at least to set it up where you have a little bit more differentiation in terms of the matchups, because, again, this was just soft overall in terms of a playoff performance. And it's not unexpected. People are acting surprised, and I don't understand why. If you were watching these teams and doing your homework, you would have seen that Toronto had a number of deficiencies that the Cavs were going to be able to exploit, and exploit them they did. And, at the end of the day, a lot of it's just mental makeup. Toronto just did not want to do the dirty work that Indiana was willing to do. And, sometimes that's just the player makeup. It's like, you may not like a guy like Lance Stephenson, and he may be a pain in the ass, but guess what? The guy puts his work in, and that's exactly what you need to do when you're playing LeBron. You can't do a half-assed double team effort, you actually have to get up in his grill. You have to be able to disrupt him. Otherwise, he's going to do whatever he wants, which is exactly what happened in this series. Every time Toronto was doing a half-hearted attempt at a double team, he would just find the open man. And even on the man-on-man coverage, at no point did LeBron seem even remotely pestered the way he was by Lance Stephenson, because Lance was putting in the effort that you have to do on the defensive end if you're covering LeBron. And even on Miles Turner, it's like there are other guys on Indiana willing to put in the work. Boston has those guys. Philly, I'm not as sold on being able to do anything to LeBron defensively, just from what I've seen from them in the regular season and the playoffs. But Boston definitely has the capabilities of giving Cleveland a lot of trouble in a matchup. So I'm not willing to go on the limb that people are saying that the Cavs are going to roll through the Eastern Conference Finals now. I think that bears more witnessing as to what goes on as the playoffs unfold. But, you know, again, this was what the Cavs needed to do. They needed to get through this series quickly just to get LeBron as much rest as humanly possible. But, again, this is just on Toronto not showing up at all for this series and being completely unprepared for what was happening to them, because it looked like they were going through deja vu. And, you know, instead of years past where they actually put up a fight, they just said, no, we're good, and just kind of rolled over, which is utterly pathetic. But, you know, it is what it is at this point. Hey, Throwdown Nation. Are you at the bottom of your fantasy league wondering what is going on with your quarterback? Well, I think I've got a new show that may just fit the bill for you. The show is called Celebrity QB, featuring four-time Super Bowl champion coach Charlie Weiss. Unlike other football shows, you'll get the inside scoop on all things quarterbacks to get your burning questions answered, such as, is this the year Tom Brady finally looks his age? Can Aaron Rodgers actually play a full season on one healthy leg? And can Dak Prescott actually lead the Cowboys to a Super Bowl in spite of Jerry Jones? Coach Weiss and co-host Steve Stroud have got you covered on all things quarterbacks. Listen now on Apple Podcasts or any major media platform. Celebrity QB, everyone's favorite position. Meanwhile, in the other Eastern Conference matchup, we have the 76ers, who were down 0-3 to the Boston Celtics through their own stupidity, because they should have won games 2 and 3, but for lack of concentration and just poor coaching decisions, the Sixers are down 0-3, which no NBA team has ever come back from. Last night, Boston, you could tell, were phoning it in. They weren't working as hard for the best shot possible. They were taking good looks, but not great looks, which they had been doing so far in the series. And so they had the worst shooting performance of the playoffs. And on top of that, they got whistled for 28 fouls. Now, again, sometimes with the NBA, you get a lot of hometown cooking, but this was a little bit much. The refs definitely seem to have an interest in extending this series, although the NBA never likes bringing that up, but it is what it is. After the Donaghy situation, there's always going to be instances where people are going to question why some teams are getting preferential treatment from the refs, given the disparity of foul calls. And, it was readily apparent that the Celtics were going to be on the short end of the stick for much of the night, and that bore out to be the case. But, you know, outside of that, people were saying this extends the series. I really don't see it that way, because that was Philly's farewell song to their fans. I think they were putting in additional effort. Brent Brown, who has been rightly criticized for many of the decisions he's made in this playoff series in particular. He went with T.J. McConnell. That gave a little bit spark. Using T.J. McConnell in a starting lineup with Ben Simmons gave Ben Simmons a little bit of relief from having to carry the ball up by having another point guard in there. McConnell played well. It's just one of those where I think that's a temporary stopgap measure. I think Brad Stevens is going to figure out a way of countering that for Game 6. Even with Shane Larkin's injury depleting the backcourt for Boston and making it harder for them to play small ball with Rozier and Larkin, you know, at the end of the day, Boston should be able to take care of business in Game 5 at home with the Boston crowd behind them. So I look for this series to be over. And it's a shame, too, because Joel Embiid has shown glimpses of being the guy who can truly give the Cavaliers trouble. Just because I think he would absolutely wear Kevin Love out, and Tristan Thompson for that matter. You know, it's just one of those things where they threw away the ball. They were making the mistakes I was expecting them to make in a matchup against the Cavaliers. They're making it one round early, and Boston has made them pay every single time they've made a mistake. So I look for that trend to continue. Even though the Sixers tighten up their ball play, I think on the road, it's going to be a lot harder to play that style of basketball without making mistakes. It's going to be an interesting one to watch, but I think the series for the Eastern Conference Finals is going to be the Cavs versus the Celtics. And I think that will happen with both teams getting a good amount of rest just due to how they were able to finish off their opponent. So there's that, and then you've got the ever-increasingly likelihood that Golden State and Houston will face off against each other the way everyone envisioned it happening. Both Golden State and Houston went up 3-1 in their respective series against the Pelicans and the Jazz. You know, the Pelicans are still trying to run and gun with the Warriors. I don't get the strategy. It's not working. It will never work. When you're facing a superior shooting team, you don't want to give them more opportunities to shoot the ball. I don't understand why you're trying to do fast break offense. Now, Rajon Rondo will hit guys in transition to get an easy bucket. That's not what I'm complaining about. My complaint has to do with early shots that are on the front end of the 24-second shot clock. So if you're shooting with more than 10 seconds off on the clock against the Warriors, you're playing into their hands. You need to work the clock to your advantage. And I'm not saying heave up a desperation shot at the last minute, but you got to work the offense so you're not getting engaged 14, 15 seconds out. You're getting engaged with about 11, 12 seconds left on the clock, and that makes it easier once you start swinging the ball around. You're going to be under 6 seconds on the shot clock. That's how you get to the Warriors. You've got to limit the possessions but still get quality looks. The problem with these teams is they keep going for quality looks but leaving too much time on the clock. If you give the Warriors enough shot attempts, they're going to make you pay. I mean, the key is you got to force them to turn the ball over and work the clock to your advantage. If you give them fewer shot opportunities, that's just keeping a good 10, 12 points off the books because of the fact that they're going to hit some three-pointers as well. You're just not going to make it work trying to go shot for shot, which is exactly what the Pelicans are trying to do. I just don't think that was the best course of action against a team like Golden State. Moving on to baseball, we have the Yankees and Red Sox series up in the Bronx this week, so that's going to be the hot ticket in town. But just looking at it from a fantasy perspective, we got a ton of injuries to kind of go through. So let's get right down to it. Obviously, I talked about the Corey Seager news last week. Later on in the week, we had Johnny Cueto go down on the DL with elbow inflammation. He was getting a second opinion from Dr. James Andrews yesterday. No further word on that front yet, but that's never a good sign when you actually have to go see James Andrews. I don't care what you say, but, you know, the extent of it is that, you know, he's probably going to be out a couple of weeks, if not multiple months. So you're probably looking anywhere from 6 to 8 weeks, maybe more. But, I mean, if it comes back later on and he's getting later in the rehab and then it comes out that says that he still has a UCL sprain and it's actually more of a partial tear, because, you know, when it gets to sprains and tears, there's not a whole lot of differentiation depending on it. It just depends on how it comes across on the MRIs, but you know, it could very well be a season-ending injury for Cueto when all said and done. I mean, even with him missing extended period of time, if he comes back in, say, 7-8 weeks, if you go out the furthest and you're waiting in July, expecting him to turn it around, and then all of a sudden he makes 3 starts and then has to shut it down again, that's the season. They're not going to chance it again, especially with the way the Giants have been playing as of late. You know, I would be very, very concerned if I'm a Johnny Cueto owner. I try to avoid that train this year. Even though he's pitched well to start the year, I just had a bad feeling that the injuries he had last year were going to persist into this year. Although the elbow is a new thing, so that's even more of a concern just because of how many innings he's thrown. Because he's almost thrown 2,000 innings, and he hasn't had an elbow issue yet. You know, that's usually kind of ends up being around the time where you got things going on with the body. So, Cueto's definitely a red flag issue to me. Clayton Kershaw went on the DL with bicep tendonitis. You know, at least it wasn't the back again with Kershaw. But yet still, the injuries mounting up for Kershaw, given the last couple of years, that's something to keep an eye out for as we progress during the season. So I would say, you know, at the end of the day, you know, if you prioritize pitching over the bats, you're in for a tough spell without Kershaw. But My line of thinking is that, yes, I prefer getting bats early and pitching later on in the year, because to me, premium pitching doesn't make a difference until late in the season when you got playoffs on the line. It's a little bit different with roto format. I get it. But even for roto format, I still think you can do the moves for pitchers later on in the year for trades. The bats, you know, it's hard to get some of those premium bats. You know, if you miss the train early, it's the price to get them, acquire them, goes up as the season goes along, not down. Pitchers, you know, guys can start getting into a cold spell. There's still a good chance you can get those guys later on in the year. It's the hitters that are tougher to come by. So, you know, not much you can really do for those guys. But, you know, it is what it is. You just have to kind of make do with the Zach Godleys of the world. And if you can get some guys off of waiver wires like Jarlin Garcia for the Marlins, like, there are guys to plug in, but you're going to be scouting the waiver wires for a while with guys like Cueto and Kershaw going to be on the mend. Jacob DeGrom, you know, the MRI came back clean after he supposedly hyperextended his elbow swinging a bat. You know, I'll be honest, I'm still very confused as to how he hyperextended his elbow swinging a bat. It's just, I really hadn't seen that happen all that often in baseball. I mean, I've heard of it, but I've never actually seen it live in a game happen in that fashion. So kind of a head scratcher. The Mets said he was going to be fine, but then they scratched him from his start yesterday and put him on DL as a precaution. You know, my thing is with the Mets, anytime they say that they're doing it as a precaution, means that it's probably worse than they're letting on. So, you know, I don't know how, but I think he might have actually hurt himself even more than they want to save from the MRI. But, you know, you got to keep those season ticket holders engaged for if you're the Mets, I guess. But, yeah, I don't trust the Mets pitching staff to save their lives or anyone else's career, for that matter. So, a couple other guys who got hurt this week. Dansby Swanson went on the DL, but he had been out for a couple of games anyway with left wrist soreness, so he should be back next week. Tommy Pham left the game on Saturday. The outfielder for the Cardinals, He had right groin tightness yet again. You know, he had that problem 2 weeks ago, and it came back again. So it's almost a guarantee he's going to be put on the DL. And with that, you know, he should be out. I mean, at least with the 10-game DL, you know, it'll be a week at least. But it could have been the 15-day DL rules, where you were guaranteed losing 2 weeks. But you know, at least the Cardinals were able to kind of nip it in the bud once and for all, because him playing the last couple of games and then re-aggravating it, it's almost always worse when you re-aggravate it after the fact. So, in terms of, I forgot a couple more guys. So, Miguel Cabrera, hamstring strain. So, the Tigers are going to be without their first baseman until probably end of next week. And you also had Shohei Ohtani miss his start. He should be fine, though, because he threw a bullpen session. So he should be on track to pitch this upcoming weekend. All right, so getting right down to it, in terms of guys who have just been red hot, Odubel Herrera, the outfielder for the Phillies, after not having a multi-home run game in the first couple of years of his career, he's had his second multi-home run game in the span of 10 days. So he's definitely a guy who's on the rise and drawing some more attention to himself in a good way. So that's a really good speculative play for a sell high candidate. If I'm an Odubel Herrera owner, I would even say, like, I'm not taking a low ball offer for him. Certainly, I wouldn't get too greedy, but I would say that he's definitely played himself in this position where you can get a second tier starting pitcher and a good bat in return for him that's struggling. So that's definitely an opportunity where you can probably get a pitcher from round three and also a bat from round four or five that may be struggling. There are guys that are available that are not putting up numbers. Now, I'm not saying you're going to be getting the Stantons of the world or Goldschmidt's, but there are guys that have not necessarily gotten off to the starts that they're looking for. Yeah, I mean, you're talking about even the McCutcheons of the world that people thought were going to break out. There are guys available, and you can get a quality starter to boot for Herrera. So that's something to consider, especially if you've got injuries in your starting pitcher staff, whether you had a Robbie Ray or Kershaw. With guys going down, those are the kinds of players you want to sell high on, just to kind of cover yourself if you got a bunch of injuries that you're trying to manage around. All right, so to cap off, you know, I got to admit when I'm wrong, and I was certainly wrong on this one. The Washington Capitals actually got the job done last night against the Pittsburgh Penguins. You know, I didn't see this one happening. Even when the Capitals won Game 5, I really did not see it happening where the Pens could actually lose this series. I always figured that the Pens would find figure out a way to get past Washington last night and then go on and win Game 7 in D.C. That was always my expectation. I believe that's the expectation most hockey analysts had. But it's been a kind of a wacky playoffs thus far. And the Caps, to their credit, were the better team last night. That wasn't a lucky win. That was a well-earned victory, because they peppered Matt Murray with shots all night long, and they had the faster legs. They were getting to the puck faster. They were winning the battles along the boards. I mean, the Penguins really and truly only won about 10 minutes of that game. And it also went into overtime. So that kind of shows you how slanted that contest really was between the two squads. Washington really did earn it, and Matt Murray was keeping the Penguins in it by being the best player on the ice for the Penguins. The Capitals had definitely had the fresher legs throughout the game. And, you know, at the end of the day for Pittsburgh, Malkin never really was quite the same. Patrick Hornquist really didn't bring the goods. You know, Derek Brassard was a non-factor. I mean, even though he was on the checking line, he didn't really bring the energy. Washington's 3 and 4 lines just outplayed Pittsburgh's 3-4 lines. You know, they flat out did. Even with Wilson's suspension, Washington's back end lines outplayed Pittsburgh's. Pittsburgh's just did not get the contributions that they needed on the back end, and it put a lot of pressure on Crosby and Jake Guentzel to put up numbers in the absence of Malkin playing up to his usual level. So, you know, credit to the Capitals. They finally got one over on Pittsburgh after 4 tries. No one really gave them a chance to, including me, so I'll admit that I was wrong. But at the end of the day, I still like Tampa over Washington. I thought Tampa would have had a tough time getting past Pittsburgh. I think it's a much easier challenge for them to deal with Washington, because Tampa's lines match up better with Washington overall. And I think from a number of perspectives, Tampa can give Washington fits on the defensive end with more balanced lines. And that's why I was a little bit surprised that Pittsburgh just did not get the production out of the likes of Phil Kessel and Hornquist the way that I thought they would in that series. That's why I picked Pittsburgh easily in the landslide, but the role players did not show up in that series. So credit to the Caps for playing good defense, but I think that changes come the series against Tampa Bay. So that's going to do it for now, but we're going to have possibility of some intrigue going on with the NBA games tonight. You also have in the NHL, you got a Game 7 on tap between Winnipeg and Nashville that I did not get a chance to get into, but credit to Nashville for going on the road and beating Winnipeg in Winnipeg yet again. This is the first time Winnipeg lost back-to-back home games since February, so quite some time. Winnipeg's a tough out. I think Nashville takes that series, but I felt that series was going 7 regardless. But man, oh man, Winnipeg showed me something in this series that if Nashville can get past this Winnipeg series, I think they can actually win the cup, because that Winnipeg team, that's a special team right there in terms of their physicality. So that's an interesting one to see whoever makes it pass. I think it's should be the Stanley Cup favorite now that the Pens are out of the way. The Pens had the balance and the veteran leadership and all the intangibles, but in terms of top to bottom skill set wise, Nashville and Winnipeg have shown me that they're the two top teams in the playoffs right now. So I'm very curious to see who's going to win this Game 7, because I think this might actually be the determining factor of the Stanley Cup. You never know, because injuries can always happen, but given the style of play, I think these two have done quite well. And of course, you can't discount Vegas, who continues to roll on. It's going to be an interesting conclusion to the Stanley Cup playoffs, that's for sure. So that's all for now, everyone, and have a good one.
It's the most talked about position in all of sports, the quarterback. And now there's a show solely dedicated to the most sought after role on the field, Celebrity QB, featuring 4-time Super Bowl champion coach Charlie Weiss. Unlike other football shows, you'll get the inside scoop on all things quarterbacks. Like, is this the year Tom Brady finally looks his age? Will dating Danica Patrick distract Aaron Rodgers?
I mean, he's dating Danica Patrick, Charlie. We're interested in that, you know?
Well, I mean, Tommy's got Giselle. I'll take Giselle, okay?
Is Dak Prescott good enough to win a Super Bowl for the Cowboys? Which rookie quarterback has the best shot of making a positive impact in 2018?
How about intellectually, Charlie, as far as what they ask the quarterbacks to do now?
The game has changed, but the pressure that's put on quarterbacks, and it always been put on quarterbacks, is tremendous.
Join Charlie Weiss and co-host Steve Strout on an all-new podcast from Lasting Media, exclusively about quarterbacks. Subscribe now at Apple iTunes or wherever you listen to great podcasts. Celebrity QB, everyone's favorite position.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.